Okay.
Make sure you speak sign and repeat questions on this last one.
Okay. Hello, everyone. I see some familiar faces and a lot of new ones. This is my first time here at NiceBug, so it's good to meet you all. My name is Johnny Lam. I work with the NetBSD project, and my main area of expertise is packet source, but that's not what I'm going to talk about today. I'm going to talk about my experiences of using Xen, which is a machine virtualization technology. If you have any questions, please just feel free to ask them. This is not a very long talk. I guess I wasn't really told that it was going to be to this many people. So a little bit of surprise me, but I'll do the best that I can. Okay. This is a talk about system administration, so this is part of the life of the sysadmin. All right, we'll move on.
That was today.
Yes, that was today's Dilbert. Okay, just to let people know, I am not a kernel developer. There will be some questions which I will not be able to answer. I know that I think Isaac Levy gave a talk 2 months ago or 8 weeks ago about jail, but I think he's much more knowledgeable about jail than I am about Xen. So I'll do my best to answer your questions, but there are a lot of times where I'll just, the only thing I'll be able to do is to refer you to the Xen documentation that's online. Also, this talk covers Xen 2.0, which is what NetBSD runs on. There's just now been some support for, or initial support for getting NetBSD to work on Xen 3.0, which has some new features, but that's not what I've experienced with, so that's not what I'm going to talk about. And again, I don't know much about jails, but if someone wants to enlighten me during different parts of the talk for things that are relevant, please feel free to chime in. Okay, so my basic problem with system administration is managing lots of machines, and part of the reason why I manage lots of different machines is because I'm trying to isolate processes and users. And there are the three basic things that you want to happen. You don't want processes and services to interfere with each other when they're running on the same machine. You don't want users to be able to access each other's files unless they're actually given explicit permission to do so. And users have different levels of access to the services that you provide, and you need to have some way to control that. And you have to do this in an efficient way so that you're not constantly editing some file over and over again for every little thing that happens. Okay, so this is part of the whole Unix idea, where all processes run their own address space. You can run them as different users, you can run them in chgroup jails, and you have specific control over which users can enter and look at which files and directories on your file system. So if you're a clever admin, you can just run everything on one humongous machine. You can partition everything up correctly, and you can set all your file permissions correctly, and everything will run magically. That's not been my experience with administering machines. Difficulties that I've encountered: there's a lot of bookkeeping overhead. If you run one big machine that runs lots and lots of stuff, you have to document the entire setup so that if you ever leave, someone else can come in and work on things. So you can also delegate parts to other people to help them understand what's happening and so on. If you're installing, there's some software which wants to run on its own, or you need different pieces of software that rely on different versions of other software, and there aren't too many packaging systems which will magically allow for this kind of thing to happen. So you have to go in and do it all yourself. You have to do it manually, which is time-consuming and not really that much fun. You would like to allow your junior system administrators to help you do stuff, but if you run everything on one machine, it's just hard. Sometimes they mess stuff up, and you have to go in and restore from tape, or you have to... Well, it's just not pleasant when people mess up, and it's nicer if you can just avoid the issue altogether. And lastly, the networks that I administer a hybrid of Unix and Windows machines, and we have a Windows Active Directory on our network. It is kind of the biggest example I have of how annoying it is to manage, like, across the entire network, all of your user and group accesses, because all your servers have, there's Microsoft best practices, which doesn't seem to match what my best practices would be if I didn't run Windows. Let's just leave it at that. Okay, so workarounds for this problem of running all on one big machine is, well, you just run them all on separate machines. It's easy to understand the typical security implications because there's no overlap because they're just running on different processors. You can allocate your like database server or your file server to machines that have faster disks, and you can allocate your things like, what do I run? There's some machines that need more memory or faster network access, and you can just run them all on machines where you buy the specific hardware to suit that particular application. And security-wise, each machine only has the smallest number of local users that are needed to run whatever is on the machine. It's a problem if you have a big machine with, 100 different users on it, where each of them there's 100 different points of attack for getting onto your machine that you don't necessarily want. And if you have the machine running critical services, again, not a good thing. This is all stuff that you all probably know already, so. Alright, so virtualization. So it's nice to do it all on a whole bunch of different machines, but, I mean, you don't really want to be going in there into your data center all the time and fiddling with all the different machines and setting up new servers and whatnot. Virtualization lets you do it all on just one machine. It's dense, so you save on your power costs here and all your hardware costs. You're only running one machine, you're powering one machine instead of 10 machines or 15 machines. It's simpler to maintain because virtual machines, it's just running a command to set up a new machine or running a command to destroy a machine. You're not going in there and fiddling with power supplies and making sure all the wires are all hooked up correctly. And you don't have to learn anything new when you're administering a virtual machine. Once you create the machine and install the OS, it's just like any other standard installation of the operating system. I know that if you're into things like fancy TH boots or, I guess, jails, there's a certain extra bit of work that you have to do, or extra bit of knowledge. Oh, I'm sorry. I'll try to speak louder. If there's some water that's in here that someone could get, that would be great. Where was I? Thanks very much. Okay, so the problem with that I've observed when I'm running stuff that's in chroots or jails is that you have to keep track of more things. It's not like a standard, like when I'm installing FPC on Xen, it's just a normal FPC instance. There's no extra like special top process to look at all the processes running across all the different machines or just the processes on that machine. It's just like a standard hardware install of the OS on real hardware. Okay, so there's some disadvantages to virtualization. First of which is that since you're running lots of things on one machine, again, you need something that's substantial. You need a beefy machine. It costs more money, but I think it's worth it in the end. And like any other virtualization technology, there's a performance hit when you're doing things on one machine. Different virtualization technologies have different penalties. Zen happens to be less than some. If you run things like Box or QEMU or VMware, if anyone's done that, I'm sure you realize that there's sometimes a really major performance hit, like up to 50% for running different processes that access disk or network. Okay, the screen's a little small. These are some virtualization technologies that that I'm aware of and that I've seen used before. There's probably some that there should be some that aren't on this list. I'm just not aware of them. If there's anyone here that knows anything about open/zones, I'd actually like to talk with you about it after the talk is over. And also previous details. Again, it's because of my work in package source, I'm interested in things that let you run or build in completely standalone environments, and I think those are technologies which are used for that. Okay. So a lot of people ask me, like, why use Zen, why use jails? I don't really know much about jails. All I know from what I've heard is that there are just two different ways you can use to solve this particular set of problems that I'm looking at. So I'm guessing that for this particular usage, it really doesn't matter whether you're using Zen or jails, except for the fact that I use NetBSD and there's no jails in NetBSD, so I use Zen. Okay, so Zen comes in. There's a Zen kernel which runs, that's called a hypervisor on the machine, and there's a misconception that Zen runs on top of NetBSD or runs on top of Linux. It's actually the other way around. Zen provides like the base hardware abstraction. Thanks very much, Gary. Provides a base hardware abstraction on top of which you port NetBSD or you port Linux to run on top of Zen. Zen in this particular case, Zen 2.0 at least, only runs on x86 processors, only in 32-bit. You can run them on AMD 64-bit machines, but only in 32-bit mode. It's developed by the folks over at the University of Cambridge, and right now there's a commercial company which develops Zen. I think they're being helped by people at IBM and people at Red Hat that are really into pushing like commercial virtualization technologies. Okay, so Zen is GPL licensed. You're allowed to write things that call the Zen hypercalls, and those don't have to be GPL. That's why NetBSD remains BSD licensed, even though it runs on top of Zen. The hypervisor only implements x86 machines. There's some special devices that it creates for the disk and also for the network access. The next two points are from the NetBSD or the Zen FAQ. It's just in their description. It securely executes multiple virtual machines. I don't know too much about the securely portion of it. That's just what they say, and I have no reason not to believe them from the things that I've tried. And close to native performance if you're running just like a single domain in Zen, it runs with almost the same CPU and disk and network speed as just the standard install of NetBSD on the same hardware. Okay, so Zen domains come in two flavors for a Zen setup. There's the thing called the privileged domain, which it manages all of the guest domains that you are running on the system, and this is the only domain that has access to the physical hardware. All other domains only access the devices that you set up within the privileged domain. And right now, or at least for Zen 2.0, you can run either Linux or NetBSD as a privileged domain. This is up to NetBSD 3.0 and current. They both support running domain 0 in Zen. The other flavor of Zen domains is the unprivileged domain. These are your guest domains that you're going to run all your processes as. I only know firsthand that Linux and NetBSD run as unprivileged domains, as guest domains is the other way of saying it. The Zen page says that FreeBSD 5.x and Plan 9 both have been ported to it. I don't know if that's true or not. Say that again? Oh, okay. All right, so the news is that FreeBSD 6.1 supports as both domain 0 and domain both as the privileged and unprivileged domains for FreeBSD 6, so it's a good thing. We have more choice. So FreeBSD users can actually have a real choice between using Zen and using Jails. So I hope someone from the FreeBSD camp will try both and let us know which is better. Okay, so my concrete example, this is one particular machine that I do have running Zen. I have a couple in my data center, but I'm just picking this one as an example. It's a Dell PowerEdge 1750 with dual Xeons. It has 2 gigs of RAM. Part of the reason it only has 2 gigs is because Zen 2.0 has this 2 gig limit on the amount of memory you can have running on the machine. This is a major limitation, which I do acknowledge, but...
Maybe I'm just saying, are you going to go into exactly why you're doing it? Why are you using it? Because, like, a lot of times when you're talking about Zen, it's been like, developers trying to use different operating systems. But you're going to go into why, right?
Okay, so the question is, am I going to get into why I'm using Zen?
What are you doing with it?
Yeah, the question is am I going to go into why I'm using it and what I'm using it for? This particular example will have some examples of what I use it for, and I hope that'll answer the question. Okay, so this particular machine, I run NetBSD 3.0 on both of them, as both the privileged domain and also the guest domain. I did a setup because when I was testing Zen before I deployed it, I needed some way to create a whole bunch of domains, destroy them and whatnot, and then at the end I realized that I should probably just keep the setup when I deploy it for real. So that's part of the setup I'm going to describe here. The privileged domain has only 64 megs of RAM. You don't really need that much for the privileged domain. It only runs like a few daemons and also manages it runs the utility to manage the your various guest domains. There's nothing, you shouldn't really be running anything in your privileged domain. For all of my guest domains, I have a standard setup where I have where I run machines with 128 megs of RAM, and there's a varying amount of disk space that I allocate to those machines. Oh, the other thing about my setup is that I run file back domains. So the disks are all they're all actually just big files on my domain 0 file system. It's just easier to manage this way. I can create and destroy these things very dynamically, and I don't have to worry about changing my partition tables or allocating, like adding new drives or whatnot. It's a very simple procedure.
What performance differences did you see, or did you not try it with?
I actually wish I had tried it first with partitions, but I decided to do this at the outset just for simplicity, so I don't have those numbers to give you, unfortunately. Part of the reason I did this setup is I Well, I guess this is doable with a hard partition as well, but what I was doing was creating big files in my file system, and then I have I'm doing a CGD on CGD on top of BND devices. In NetBSD terms, that means it's a you're doing an encrypted disk over a file back disk, and it seemed easier to play with this when I was using files instead of real partitions. Okay. I'm sorry, did you have a question?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Question about the memory. Sitting zero, you've got 64 minutes, you're 28. Are those variable in real time? Can you change those? And do they show like a solid block, 64 minutes, or the rest of
the system? Okay. The question is whether the amount of memory that you allocate to domains is something you can dynamically change, and also whether the blocks are contiguous. From my understanding of it, if you're running, it's not something you can change for the privileged domain, but if your OS supports it, you can change the memory allocation on the guest domains. Now, there's something called the balloon driver in Xen, which they've added to, which they support in Linux. So I think in Linux you can grow the amount of memory that you dynamically that you've allocated to a domain, although I'm not sure if you can shrink it. NetBSD does not support dynamically allocating memory. As for the contiguous blocks part of the question, the documentation that I've read suggests that it's not necessarily contiguous. The hypervisor is free to allocate blocks them all over the place to form the amount of memory that you're giving to a domain. Okay, so the question is why we shouldn't run anything in our privileged domain. It's because the privileged domain is the single point where you can manage all other domains. So you don't want to run anything in that domain because if it gets broken into as a service, then you have the possibility of someone messing up, you know, all 30 machines that you're running, as opposed to just the one that they hack into. I think the question was whether you can.
You have to divide that, like you would say, for mounting a partition.
Okay, so the question is whether you can mount real raw partitions in a guest domain. The answer to that is that a guest domain cannot see anything that the privileged domain does not provide for it. Now, the domain zero, in my setup, I have them create files, but you can have domain zero provide access to the raw partition on the disk. Now, so domain zero lets the guest domain access the raw partition, but it's mediated through the hypervisor hypercalls. So it's not like it's not completely raw, correct? Although it's not doing anything to the access, so you're basically writing to the raw bit.
So you could actually have two domains to share partitions. If you're in the privileged domain, to get access to the broadest device to both domains.
Okay, no, the question is whether you can provide access to the same partition from both domains. You can. You would want to provide read-only access, but yes, you can. And I actually take advantage of this in this setup so I can do some nifty things. Any other questions for now?
I don't see another failover in my brain.
happens to go from
A to B. Okay, so the question is whether you can do migration on a live domain. And from what I've read of the Zen documentation, Zen 2.0 is the first one that supported it. You can migrate a Linux guest domain, but not an SBSD one. That part wasn't considered very high priority for the NetBSD developer who's doing most of the work on this. His name is Manuel Boyer, and I do give him a whole lot of thanks for the help he's given me in this past year on answering all my questions about Zen. But that's not a high priority for him, and actually right now it's a higher priority to port NetBC on for Zen 3.0, so I don't bug him with too many of those types of questions. Okay, so let me move on this example. Okay, so in the domain 0 setup, first thing I do is install Zen tools from Packet Source, and this is a plug for using Packet Source as well. It does everything for you, and this particular package provides some helpful scripts for starting and stopping domains, and also for running the Zen daemon. It also provides all the necessary ancillary scripts for running file-back domains and setting up your network and whatnot. So install the package, it's a good place to start, including on Linux. Packet Source does work on Linux. Okay, the second thing I needed to do was I had to set up IP filter on NetBSD to block access to some ports, which are the control ports for the Zen daemon. There's a Python script which runs persistently in domain zero, which knows how to talk to the Zen hypervisor to do all the domain setup and domain teardown and whatnot. But you really only want the local host to ever access those ports. You don't want some guest or some random machine on your network to telnet to those ports and like send commands and shut down your mail server. Were there a question?
So all of the other domains, all the other communicate with this master domain.
Okay, so the question is whether whether all the guest domains communicate with the with domain zero over these ports, and the answer is no. I apologize for any confusion there. All the domains communicate with each other exclusively through Zen hypervisor calls. This particular daemon is only for the admins and to actually create and tear down domains. Now there's actually a replacement set of tools which is being written over at IBM, which doesn't use Python, which is what this script is based on, and it doesn't have this problem of needing to block access to ports. It doesn't use any. There's no network daemon at all. So I hope that answers the question.
So maybe what I'd say, asking what I'm curious about is ports 8000 to 8002. Are those blocked completely so no communication comes out, or is it just communication allowed just locally to the unprivileged domains? Is that local? Is that remote?
I set up IP filters to block access except for domain zero. That's the localhost. When you're setting up Zen domains, as soon as you create a domain, it's basically like a new machine. And there's no. The only way if you're you're logged into domain zero and you create the first guest domain, which let's call it domain one. Well, that's not a good terminology for it. The only way to communicate, if you're in domain zero and you want to access something in domain one, you stage to it, you telnet to it. It's just like a normal machine over the network over a network device that you created that the other one uses. Another question?
And then find your management access to that non-modable and it doesn't show up in the box, then what the public IP is on the service is on the web server, more
Okay. The particular setup I'm describing right now, it does bridging. So the default setup for using the Texture Zen tools is that each machine you create is basically like a fresh machine that's plugged into the same switch or hub that the physical machine is plugged into. Now you can do exactly what I'm sorry, what's your name, sir? You can do what Mark is describing, which is I set up IP filter on this machine only because I want to control access to the Zen daemon, which is running on this machine. There's no actual reason to run it. Okay, I set up IP filter on this machine, but it's only because I wanted to limit access to ZenD. There's actually no reason to run it otherwise, because domain zero actually doesn't offer any services. Now, in the default Zen setup that Zen Tools creates for you, what you would do is you would set up IP filter in each yes domain because it's just like running it. The point that I'm trying to push is that each machine that you're creating is just like another new physical machine. Now you can toy with different network setups between your guest domains and your privilege domain. Go ahead, Mark.
Get the 48,000 on a public IP, but there's nothing sitting on that private IP that doesn't get off the box. It never makes it out of the network on the network.
Okay. Let me say, there's no barriers to setting up that way.
Okay.
I haven't found the need to do that yet, because this simple setup is good enough for my purposes. But there's no barrier to that kind of setup. Part of the advantage of using Zen is that you can actually hook up, you can create whatever network structure that you want using your virtual machine. There's some articles on the web for creating like different lab environments for different network topologies and also just for Linux clustering, for instance, all on like one physical box using Zen. The network topology you're describing, you can definitely do it. I don't have any experience with doing it with Zen, but there's no barriers to it that I can see. Okay, so back to my particular setup. So after I do the first two steps, which is install from package source and set up blocks and ports, you have to create bridge devices for each NIC on your machine that you want your guest domains to eventually be able to see. It's part of the responsibility of domain zero to create the network devices that are used by the guest domain. So in the default setup for Zen, we create bridges so that you don't have to worry about routing packets between all of your virtual machines through the domain zero. Each fresh virtual machine that you create becomes a standalone machine on your network and a peer to your physical machine. Now, I have a peculiar setup where I do a whole lot of encryption, and the next step I do is I mount this USB key that I have all of my encryption keys on, and that's used by Zen to start up, to initially load all the file back domains, and then after that's done, I can actually pull the key and throw it away somewhere else. Last up is start ZenV, and there's an additional script which you can run to start all of your domains, which I wrote. Okay, so domain view, these are the unpublished domains, and in my concrete setup, I have three partitions for each domain. The first one is root.image, and it's a fairly small partition, or small file, which I set up to be read-only and shared between all of my guest domains. So all of them run a common version of NetBSD that I only update at one point, and all of them get the updates. Now you can do this with physical partitions, but this is a little easier for me because I can install into a new 512 megabyte file and then just copy it over and then I'm done. I just restart my domains and I've updated all of my machines. All that this image contains is just the base installed in the BSD. I removed some stuff from the from slash dev so that the NetBSD init process will create some devices for me on NFS so that I can actually have a read-only root. But that's all stuff that's related to like embedded devices, and people who've installed NetBSD on embedded devices already know all this stuff. This was something I just learned about 2 weeks ago, actually. So I just changed the setup. Before I'd done this, I actually had one file that I copied all over the place, but now I only have one file. Okay, not sure why there's all these extra bullet points. But the second partition I use is something I mount to the user package, and this is like all the software that I install that's unique to that machine. If I happen to have machines that are running the same software, I do the same thing that I do with root.image. I just share it between all those machines. For anyone that's managed software packages, it sucks when you have to update all the software on the machine, or when stuff doesn't work, you have to suddenly downgrade all the packages again. And this provides me an easy way of doing that because I install a software on a new image, I just swap it, restart the domain, and I'm done. If I find stuff doesn't work, then I could just do the same thing in reverse and get all the old working software and go back and find out what went wrong. The last partition that I create is this encrypted domain, which encrypted image, which is actually just a plain. These are the encrypted files which are created in domain zero, which are now exported to the guest domains, and these contain all this server-specific data. And there's more stuff here on the bottom which didn't show up. Ah, bummer. Okay, so this actually is the only read-write partition that's in all the guest domains. What I do on these on this particular partition is I create like /temp/var/etc, and I null map them on top of the read-only root so that I actually have writable partitions. The good part of the setup is that you can blow away the root and package images and replace them with new ones, and all of your server-specific data is still intact and preserved across your OS upgrades. Okay, so this is a short example of a DOMU file. There's not much to it. All you do is you specify the kernel that you want to use, the amount of memory, you give it a name. The CPU line is lets you specify which CPU you want the domain to run on. If you want to hard code it to a particular CPU, or if you specify -1, it lets Xen just choose whatever is free and it assigns the domain to that processor. Now there's it doesn't in Xen 2.0 you're not migrating like a domain back and forth between processors. Once Xen has assigned it to a processor, that's the one that it runs on. You set the number of NICs that you want and you configure them. You give it a MAC address so that you can identify it on your network. And you specify which physical network device you want it to connect to by specifying which bridge. And you're creating bridges for each physical device on your actual machine. And you can set an arbitrary number of NICs and you can connect them to the bridges in whichever way that you'd like. It's all very flexible. I have this kind of weird extra goop in my config because I do this thing with the encrypted setup, encrypted partitions. This is not actually in the normal Xen tools example config file, but it's I'll copy the script that I used to do this setup somewhere on the Nightbook server or over in the PC somewhere after the talk is over. The interesting line is the disk line, which is how you specify what you want to back your domain with. This is where you would specify the raw device, for instance. Instead of specifying file, you specify dev, and then you give it a raw path that domain 0 can see, and that gets exported to the get domain as wd0d or wd1d. And I actually don't know what the root config item does. From what I've been told, it actually doesn't do anything, but I just set it to a sensible value in case it does anything special. Okay, so in my concrete setup, I have one machine that does all these things. There are three NICs on the machine, so I set it up as a VPN router. That requires a little tweaking to the config file, so I can configure all three NICs with three different addresses. And I physically connect them to three different networks. I run a couple different mail servers for different DNS domains, and they all happen to be running the exact same software, so I share the same package image file across all of them. It makes it easier to update all of my postfix installs and all of my Courier IMAP. I run a file server on it. So each of these lets you tweak the amount of disk space and amount of memory that you're allocating to these virtual machines. So for file servers, you give it more disk space. For gateway server, you give it more RAM. I have one machine that I access all the time, which is the Packet Source Development Server. That's the one I use to build all of my packages for all of my domains. And there's kind of a specialty server, which is the Package Installing Server. And that's the one that, after I've built all of my binary packages, I use this server to install onto new package.image files, and then after I've installed it, then I copy it over to the right place, and I start domains using those image files and read-only access. Okay, so closing thoughts on this. I found it's very easy and very fast to test new software configs and new machine configs just by creating a new machine in a new guest domain in Xen. This setup has some similarities to setups that I'm working on for embedded devices because there's the read-only aspect of it. I can't wait till MedPC runs on Xen 3 because there's some nice features about Xen 3. One is that you're allowed to use more than 2 gigs of RAM on your machine. And it also lets you, if you have an SMP machine, you can run SMP guest domains so that you can split CPU time a bit more reasonably across all of your domains. You can use more CPU. Your CPUs are more utilized, which is always a good thing. And so final links to some more information. The NetBP Zen how-to is a great start for how to set up Zen and NetBSD. There's an interesting IO benchmark that Marty Kupernan ran, which is how he decided whether to use NetBSD or Linux for his domain zero. I posted something to the Zen mailing list for some different CGD on BND results, so that you can help see the trade-off between using different encryption algorithms if you're going to do a setup similar to what I have. I found a fairly cool config example for some guy that is running Asterisk and NipTV and a whole bunch of web apps on his for his home machine using Zen. And he partitions Asterisk and NipTV and all these things across different guest domains. And finally, the Zen Wiki is probably the best place to start if you want to just find out information about Zen and Zen development efforts. That's the end of my talk. If there's any questions, I'll try to answer them.
So, to our Robert, we like the idea. Yeah, Zen's really cool, but I'd really to echo a question I heard earlier. Why would we want to try it other than just play with a cool cooler? I mean, yeah, you've listed some of the reasons, but can you see a reason that we want to take this to our firm and say, look, you know, we know we've got lots of servers in the data center, but now we don't need them anymore? Is that?
I actually think that's a major benefit of virtualization. I mean, the fact that you have just denser setups. You're saving real money by not powering and not having to buy additional machines. Using Zen in the way that I'm using, there's no like new knowledge that I have to learn to administrate these guest domains. I mean, to be honest, I don't know how to answer that type of question. I listed the advantages that I've seen when I've run Zen, and I hope someone more articulate can take that to a firm.
Maybe I can add that.
Okay.
I was at a VMware presentation a few months ago, and a number of enterprises are taking one or two larger machines, cut down the number of machines in the data center, and the virtualization they're using, they just take copies of virtualization systems. When someone needs a new packet to a new server, they just pop it right out. They've already got the situation set up. They just pop it out to another server, and it's up within minutes or hours, as opposed to waiting for a new machine to come in days, weeks later. In addition, they've got machines that they have one machine set to do three different database servers, and they've got another machine set to back with a Xena or virtual. So you save a lot in terms of virtualization by using larger machines to perform one specific task as opposed to getting multiple machines. Cuts down on cooling in the offices, cuts down on electrical output or input, and it cuts down a lot of other features as well. And have fewer administrators in the system. Going to that's what VMware is touting, and the only difference between what VMware is touting and this is that with this stuff, you can't use Windows.
Not yet. 3.0
doesn't.
Okay. 3.0 does. This supports some of the newer features that are available on Intel and AMD chips. So.
Microsoft.
Oh, I'm sorry. Question is whether Zen 3.0 supports Windows, and it does in a way, but only if you're running some of the newer Intel or AMD hardware. So you can run it's still not really support for Windows because I think you still have to port you have to write drivers for the NetBSD for the Zen block device and the network devices for Windows, which I don't think is that hard, but
it's not the driver issue, it's the fact that you almost have to reset a file sometimes or have a module set up to connect to the hypervisor. And Windows doesn't support that for Zen.
Oh yes, yeah. That's the point I was trying to make. That if you're running newer hardware, you can just run Windows. However, you still need to support the devices.
Yeah,
I think Isaac actually question first.
I got a brief one.
Okay.
You mentioned the 2 gigabyte RAM limit. Are there any limits on file system access? Hitting 2 terabytes limits, for example. Secondly, can it be too technical? Multiple IPs in the main, IPv6 IPs are able to allocate multiple IPs towards that domain.
Repeat the first question again.
Okay, first question. File system.
The first question is whether there's a file system limit. Similarly to the way that there are currently some memory access limits. From what I understand, this is limited to what your OS supports, at least for the file system aspect of it. So if your OS supports multi terabyte file systems, you can do that in Zen.
First off, security. Who is working on this? How many individuals does IBM have on this? How many individuals are working on this? How many people are on this? Code, hypervisor, etc. How far has this gotten? How big is this?
The question is how who's working on Zen, who's auditing the code, and how much mindshare this project has.
Can you speak louder?
Okay, I'll try to speak louder. All I know is what I've read on the web. I got to be honest, I don't actually know. From what I understand, ZenSource is a commercial company which is created by the initial people who worked on the Zen research project over at the University of Cambridge, and they're doing this commercially now. They offer real products based on this, and they continue to work on Zen 3 because that's their community release of the Zen technology. I'm not sure about the auditing aspect of it. I do know that security was one of the primary concerns of the people who were initially working on Zen. And since they're all working at ZenSource now, I assume that's still a continuing concern for them. In the white paper that I read that they presented at conferences, they definitely do highlight security as an issue. They talk about the ways that Zen is addressing shared device access without allowing one domain to peek at what other domains are doing, even though they're accessing the same basic devices. Same issue with the memory access, where they're sharing pages, although you don't want to leak information from one domain to another, just through, memory pages. And those issues are things that I've seen papers presented by the Zen authors on at conferences. So I'm hoping that it's something that, since they know about it much more than I do, that they're working on it. I'll go with one more question from Isaac.
Yeah, I just got one more. I kind of have that now. You mentioned problems with jail, and so you can track more things jail as opposed to Zen. How exactly does that manifest? And then you have to set up a specialized domain and a few specialized tools to manage that domain. How are these things any different? What is your experience in jailing that actually lets you say, hey, this is easier than
jail? Okay, so this is the Zen versus jail thing.
Go on this for a
No, it's, I'll be honest. I've used jails only in a very cursory manner. Only because I don't have access to an actual FreeBSD box, which I don't have easy access to a FreeBSD box that supports jails. The FreeBSD boxes that I'm currently running are actually just running 4.4.something. It's a legitimate question about the amount of bookkeeping for running a Zen setup versus a jail setup. And what I know about the Zen setup is that the it's kind of more or less how I laid it out here in this talk. There's not much more to it. You do have to know more about how to initially set up the machine, which is going to be the same if you're setting up some of the GLs, I presume. I think some of the benefits come when you're actually giving access to people within the domain. From what I understand, Zen actually gives you, like, administering a Zen machine, a guest domain, is actually no different than administering a normal solid machine. But I think there are some differences between running a GL, administering a GL FreeBSD instance versus the a normal FreeBSD instance, which I think comes to your question about multiple IP addresses, which I've read on mail this is a problem. I don't know if it's still a problem, but having different domains all accessing the same network device with different IP addresses, it's not a problem in Zen, but I've read on mail this as a problem in jails that people have had to work around. I've read this mostly on, like, the post-red mailing lists.
I don't understand the problem. That people can't access.
I don't think I can actually get into that because I don't recall the emails, the exact emails, and I'll have to dig them up. But I'll try to talk about it afterwards.
I just wonder whether you I guess we should have a central point of failure.
Okay, central points of failure. It is true. You have a central point of failure, which is this server. I recommend getting a machine with redundant power supplies and you run RAID. I don't have another answer for that. This is true regardless of whether you're running Zen or not. If you have a machine that's running critical processes, you need something to keep that running. And it just happens that your Zen box is going to run a lot more critical processes. And you're going to give it the same type of attention to detail with making sure it has different power supplies and redundant disks. Yes, you can always throw money at this particular problem.
To
address the point of failure, initially just spend a lot more money.
I'm not entirely sure, but I think eGenera sell big boxes that address this. I think they use Zen as the base operating system. I'm not entirely sure. But the idea is you can, drag out Linux box, drag out Windows box, drag out Slurs box. But you take into your room, the whole point is it's just a bunch of blades on it, slice and dice it anyway.
What's the name of this?
eGenera.
Spell that?
eGenera.com.
Okay, so called eGenera.com is maybe using Zen for their base OS. I'll check it out. over here.
This might be a weird question, but does NetBSD allow firewalling on
the bridge level? On the virtual bridge level? The question is it's a NetBSD specific question. It's whether NetBSD supports firewalling on the bridge interface?
Yeah, because in Linux, you can actually do that in like two ways. And I know that kind of distorts what you think of the OSI stack as, but it allows for like this extra level of security you can give to most of the bridge in general.
From what I understand, you can do it in NetBSD, although I'm not familiar with it. I wish I could give you a better answer, but I don't know much about that particular topic. Although, from what I understand, it is possible.
One of the big things about Net3 is that it no longer requires a TCP connection to run the domain use. Like, previously, if you book on Sam Q, which is, you know, like next that, you'll see Python taking a bunch of ports. That's how then Dom 0
oh, yes.
Dom 2, but now it doesn't need that.
Actually, I mean, from what I understand, you can. This is still true with Zen 2. The part of it is just the way that the Zen Python script is written, the daemon script. And if you're running the IBM utilities, you're not running this. You're not running a whole bunch of different extra processes per domain. At least that's my understanding of it. I don't know much about that though. So we'll probably have to do more research on that. Are there any other questions? Oh, over here.
Process priority. How does it handle priority?
Okay. The question is, how does Zen handle priority amongst the different domains? I actually tried looking for an answer to this before this talk because I figured it's an important question, but I couldn't find one on the net, and shorter reading the source code, which I'll have to do at some point. Domain zero only shows the processes that are running in domain zero. Although you can run a tool to show which domains are running, and you can then connect each domain and find out what's running within each domain.
One of the things that domain zero process list for each domain. Under the domain process, so you could handle it through the regular scheduler, which once we start putting which domain process
you know, okay, so the question is,
when you start it on, did you start the process that's running the VM?
Right now we're talking about how the actual guest domains are kind of run from the privileged domain zero. From what I understand, domain zero is not actually running the domains. It starts and stops them, but the underlying Zen hypervisor is the actual thing that's running them. And I don't believe domain zero controls the scheduling of those guests.
And that
live
process happens to be the hypervisor that's doing all this other stuff.
Basically,
like, reignite the hypervisor.
No, there's no, but there's, let's see, I don't know how to explain this. From what I understand of how Zen works, you have Zen as, like, the base layer. You have domain zero and all your guest domains that are running on top of the Zen hypervisor.
Okay.
And it's talking to Zen, the Zen hypervisor, to create new domains, to spawn and destroy them. But you're not running, like, some process.
So it's not running on units.
Correct.
Okay.
So, but of course, the answer is that I don't really know how the domains are scheduled in the Zen hypervisor.
So if one domain goes out to lunch, it can take everybody. If one takes all the CPU and runs CPU and testing the domain, one, two, and three are affected.
And the question is whether you can have one domain hog the CPU and starve all the other ones.
Fork bombs.
Yeah, I mean fork bombs, for instance. In the test that I ran, that didn't actually happen. You can actually go into domain zero and it's responsive, and you can just kill the offending domain. I didn't see that type of problem with one domain stomping on all the other ones.
What was the test you ran?
I ran a fork farm.
Before you showed us the configuration file, that's the configuration file for Zen, right? Was there any command that you, obviously it may not be a whole command there, would there be a command in the configuration file that might set priorities for it?
Let's see. I think that's something new in Zen 3, but it's not. I didn't see anything in the Zen 2 configs. That particular config file you're talking about this thing, I assume. There's no extra bit to control priorities, but from what I understand, there is supposed to be something in Zen 3 to do that.
This is domain U, not the domain 0.
Yeah, that's right. This is for guest domain.
Does Zen itself have a configuration of some kind that you can then give priority to the domain afterwards, at that point?
Okay, so the question is whether Xen itself has some config file. There's no config file for Xen. It's everything is done through the only way to talk to the Xen hypervisor is from domain zero, and all you're doing is you're sending hyper calls to the Xen hypervisor.
Running a separate domain, have their own separate internal domain. So they never, nobody ever sees each other. So obviously, so I don't know about NetBSD so much, but in Linux, you can actually choose among pre-existing schedules and load them as modules to control how your DOM functions. So if you need more I/O intensive ones, there's an entire scheduling kernel module that you can load, and thus your clients can run a little differently. I don't know how it works in
FPC. Right. I think FPC only has a single scheduler, but the question that was asked was actually, I think, how you can prioritize different domains for running, which I don't think there's a way of doing that. From what I understand, all of them run as peers. Are there any other questions? Thank you very much.